This is WCCO, St. Paul, Minneapolis.
For 30 years, you have heard those words echo through space. For 30 years, for 1 million times, those words have come through the radio loudspeaker in your home, in the barn during early morning milking, in your car, in the service station at the crossroads, in store, in shop, in office. For 30 years, radio, WCCO Radio, has provided you with farm and market information, news, music, entertainment, laughs. The WCCO microphone has become familiar everywhere, from the marble walls of the state capitol to the farm in Dodge County. Tonight, we are celebrating our 30th year of broadcasting here from WCCO. So, come with us as we go back through the years together. 30 years with WCCO, good neighbor to the Northwest.
The early days of crystal sets soon gave way to super sets.
WCCO progressed, and now you hear the very best.
People listen far and near, better coverage year by year.
Public servant, home of stars, in the homes and in the cars.
WCCO, WCCO, from 24 to 54, a symbol of the best in radio. WCCO, WCCO, for 30 years, good neighbor to the great Northwest.
When you are 30, 60, 75, or 90, when the anniversary day rolls around, you look back. You think of events long past. Your first day in school, the first train ride, family picnics, graduation day, that first kiss,
first love, your wedding.
The memories rushing back over more years than you care to count. Tonight we plan to take you back, back across the years, back across the memories of enjoyable moments you may have forgotten. It makes an impressive list, those memories. Oscar Danielson, Whoopi John, Dick Long, the Wheaties Quartet, Tina and Tim, Jack Malerick's Orchestra, the Politicians, Frank McInerney and Fred Lundberg, Paul Orberg, Selma Erickson, Peggy Beckmark, Doug Baldwin, Jerry Harrington, Cedric Adams, Clellan Card, Eddie Dunstetter, Ramona Gerhard, Florence Murphy, Marjorie McCready, Sig Mickelson, Joe Jung and the Three Strings, Eddie Fortier, Toby Prynne, Halsey Hall, Herb Paul, and many, many more. For the next hour, sit back, relax, and let us carry you back over the years. Let us recall for you names, voices, sounds, back to enjoyable moments of the past 30 years. And then there was a young announcer at WCCO back in the 1930s, dark-haired, handsome. He has since moved to the CBS Radio Network station in Washington. You have heard him over WCCO when you listened on a Sunday afternoon. We are pleased to present Eddie Gallagher from WTOP in the nation's capital, former WCCO announcer and your master of ceremonies for tonight.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's a real pleasure for me to be back here in the Twin Cities tonight and back at WCCO where I got my first start in the radio business. Oh, there's so many familiar faces here tonight and so many people I knew way back when, it seems like a real homecoming. But the real tribute goes to the people of the present WCCO staff who have been working for weeks in putting this special anniversary show together. To recall for you radio as it used to be, sit back now and listen. In the beginning, there was WLAG. As some of the old-timers will tell you, it was located in the Oak Grove Hotel in Minneapolis. And that, if you can remember way back to 1922, was the crystal set era. Radio in those days was pretty much an off-again, on-again proposition. There was some music, public service in the form of market reports, but a good many hours of nothing but silence.
It doesn't.
Here are the closing Minneapolis grain futures. December wheat, 138 and one quarter. December oats, 44 and five eighths. December rye, $1.12. Number two corn, 107 and one quarter. Number three corn, 106 and one quarter. We leave the air now until the next market report in 2 or 3 hours. This is WLAG, your Call of the North station in St. Paul and Minneapolis. Please stand by.
At first, nobody seemed to mind the long periods of silence in radio station schedules. It was so great a miracle merely to hear a voice coming from a mysterious collection of wires and coils and a cat's whisker. But gradually, the management of WLAG and the public desired something more than just market reports in silence. One day, for instance, a young sausage maker from Stockholm, who had assembled an orchestra to play genuine Swedish music on the vaudeville circuits and at the old Schubert Theater in Minneapolis, stopped in to see the management of WLAG.
Oh, I say, have you fellas ever thought of filling up some of those nothings you have on radio in between those markets? I have a fine Swedish band. We're playing over to Schubert. Real good, too, even if I say so myself.
Well, maybe you've got an idea, Mr. What was your name again?
Danielson. Oscar Danielson.
Oh, yes, Mr. Danielson. Well, I don't think I've ever heard of your band. What's it sound like?
Well, I just happened to have the boys outside. I brought them over so you could hear them. Oh, fellas, come in here. They want to hear a tune. Let's play that one we rehearsed.
And a deal was made. Oscar Danielson's orchestra did come on the station to fill the nothings on the schedule. And he was an instant success. Mail poured in by the truckload, and visitors thronged to see Oscar Danielson and his original Swedish orchestra. And this is the way it sounded. Remember?
Good often we rockin'. We open our program often with In Chenek's Not the Barcelona, presented by Oscar Danielson and his orchestra.
Yes, there's no question about it. Oscar Danielson's orchestra was a tremendous hit. A smash hit, we'd call it now. And the Scandinavian segment of the radio audience of the day loved the old folk tunes from back home. But there were others who wanted to hear the tunes from the old country, too. And the Germans were just as pleased when a local boy from New Ulm, Minnesota, was hired to play German schottisches and polkas. And that New Ulm boy, you still hear him today, was Whoopie John Wilford. It was tough to keep a radio station on the air back in the early 20s, and so WLAG ceased broadcasting in July of 1924. The business people were quite amazed at the uproar which occurred when the markets, the Swedish and German band music was replaced by nothing but silence. They learned that radio and WLAG had already become an integral part of the economy of the area. The Scandinavians and the Germans not only missed their folk music, but the farmers had come to rely on the daily broadcast of market information. A service which meant dollars and cents in their pockets. So the businessmen of Minneapolis and St. Paul decided something had to be done. It's significant that the business people of both Minneapolis and St. Paul forgot their differences and agreed unanimously that radio had to go back on the air. The problem, as always, was money. A committee was formed to approach the milling industry, which at that time was the largest in the region. The Washburn-Crosby Company, later to become General Mills, accepted the challenge and agreed to put up half the money necessary to put radio back on the air, if the businessmen of Minneapolis and St. Paul would raise the other half. Well, it was a deal. And on the 2nd of October, 1924, WCCO, its call letter signifying the Washburn-Crosby Company, returned to the airwaves. The farmers were happy. They had their market reports back. The Scandinavians and the Germans could listen to the folk tunes once more. New names and new voices. New services began to be heard on the airwaves. Radio was progressing out of the diaper stage and was beginning to toddle. Not only were programs improving, but the radio sets themselves were undergoing change. The crystal set was becoming old hat. To be really modern now, you had to have a one-tube receiver with a loud speaker and a basement full of wet cell and dry cell batteries. As a symbol of growth, of change, of progress, WCCO had good reason for celebration on March the 4th, 1925. A new word entered the radio listener's language. Another miracle. Network, it was called. Special telephone lines reaching out thousands of miles, bringing voices of the great to the most remote corners of the continent. And with much fanfare, the management of WCCO announced a new service to its listeners in the Northwest. For the very first time in the history of the United States, the citizens could hear the inauguration of the President of the United States in their own living room. And it so happened on that very day, WCCO was having an inauguration of its own, the dedication of a brand new 5,000-watt transmitter way out in the country at Anoka. Well, it was a tremendous day. For weeks, newspaper stories, full-page advertisements proclaimed this new wonder, this new miracle. Not only would the voice of the president be heard in the Twin Cities, but now through WCCO's greatly augmented power, could be heard as far away as 100 miles from the Twin Cities. Could be heard as far east as Eau Claire, Wisconsin, south to Austin, west to Wilmer, and north to Brainerd. And radio set owners were swept into the spirit of the day. History in the making. They fiddled with the cat's whisker, made sure the battery was charged, checked the headphones. And then came the big day, the day thousands had been waiting for.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys of the Northwest. We have gathered today for the common purpose of attending a great event in the history of the United States, the inauguration of Calvin Coolidge as president of this great republic. For the first time, science has made it possible for all America to join the audience greeting our chief executive as he assumes the heavy responsibilities of his great office. It is expected that the presidential oath of office will be given at 11:20, following which President Coolidge will deliver his inaugural address, lasting approximately 1 hour. The first number of the musical program, which we are broadcasting while we wait for the start of the inaugural ceremonies, will be Bring Back Those Rockabye Baby Days by Dick Long and his Nanking Cafe Orchestra. Less than 15 minutes, the start of the inaugural ceremonies will be made. We are advised by our direct telegraph wire from Washington. This program to which you have been listening will be concluded immediately before the moment the affair starts. We assure you, we will make the switch to Washington in ample time for you to hear the whole affair. May we remind you that the management of the Gold Medal Station is very anxious to know just how many listeners make up our audience this morning. With the splendid cooperation of the Northwest Radio Trade Association, the schools, the newspapers, and scores of organizations, we believe the audience listening to the Gold Medal Station will make up a good percentage of the national audience. We are particularly interested in hearing from groups and assemblages giving the number in attendance that we may make a fairly accurate estimate of the total figure. We will appreciate word from you.
We are particularly interested in hearing from groups and assemblages, the man said that morning on March the 4th, 1925. The groups and assemblages reported in all right, and their reports were not altogether favorable. In fact, they were most unfavorable, downright uncomplimentary. It was a most discouraging day for the management of WCCO.
What in tarnation is wrong with this dad-burned radio? I bought a new cat's whisker. I've checked those gall-blamed batteries and aerial. All the connections are tight. There's only one thing it can be. It's that gull-durned, dad-blamed radio station. I knew they shouldn't have moved the transmitter way out there in the country to Anoka. I'm going to tell them what I think of their darn transmitter.
Now, Lars, I've told you 1,000 times if I told you once to lose your temper over little things like that.
Yeah, but...
Now, you know it's not good for your blood pressure.
But,
Now, don't you dare interrupt. I like the radio as much as you do. But you don't see me losing my temper, do you? See how calm I am?
But,
now, Lars, I simply won't have it. I'm sure there's some logical explanation. There must be something wrong with the set. Besides, I won't have you using that vile language in front of the children. We'll have to call the radio station.
That little scene, repeated in so many homes that morning in 1925, was not altogether the fault of the radio station. It was true the transmitter had been moved out to the country. It was true the crystal set would not pick up the signal. But a 1 or 2 tube receiver would and did pick up the inauguration of the President of the United States perfectly. It was the end of the crystal set era, and merchants, to their amazement, found themselves beset with a new clamor for the vacuum tube radio receiver. That same day, WCCO staged an elaborate ceremonial program, inaugurating not only its new transmitter, but also the opening of the new studios in the new Nicollet Hotel. And what a night that was. The program went on for 5 hours, starting at 8:30 in the evening and continuing until the wee small hours.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the gold medal radio station, WCCO St. Paul, Minneapolis, broadcasting a program from the new Nicollet Hotel, Minneapolis, Minnesota. The operation of the station over the past few months has indicated to us various forms of entertainment which seem to be the most popular. We have endeavored to arrange our numbers to meet the approval of our listeners, and we hope that the entertainment which has been provided this evening will be acceptable. Gold Medal Station, Minneapolis, St. Paul, broadcasting. The Northwest is very proud of its numerous fine orchestras. This evening, we present to you one of these with which you are all familiar. George Osborne's original Nicollet Hotel Orchestra. Mr. Osborne will conduct the orchestra in a performance of the famous prelude in C sharp minor by Serge Rachmaninoff.
And on that thrilling festive night, a young coloratura soprano was one of the featured soloists. She was Miss Selma Erickson. Miss Erickson is still a resident of Minneapolis. And when we contacted her a few days ago, she told us that the years had taken some of that coloratura quality from her voice. But we were able to persuade her to come on this program tonight and recreate for you the number she sang on that night, March the 4th, 1925, Solveig Song. So we are very pleased to present in person Selma Erickson.
Schierfielder, gold winter of war, but a winter of war. Of next summer met all day lower, all day lower. Men in gun build to come.
Selma Erickson. A young man who was just getting started in the entertainment business in 1925, a staff member of WCCO, a favorite of millions in the Northwest, and now a world-famous Hollywood personality, was also a featured soloist on that inaugural night program. we have a recording of the introduction and the actual selection played that night by the magician of the keyboard, Eddie Dunstetter.
And now, Eddie Dunstetter seats himself at the console of the mighty organ to play Nola as only he can play it.
And with that gala occasion, WCCO was launched upon years of service, years of entertainment to the people of the great Northwest. And radio entered still a new era. In those years, in the late 1920s, it became apparent even to the doubters, even to the scoffers, that radio was here to stay. Gone were the nothings on the schedule. There were no more blanks. New programs, new faces, new names, and new voices became familiar to every radio listener. And radio was searching, seeking something new, exploring, inventing. The spirit was, well, let's try it. Maybe it'll work. As humorous as some of those early efforts sound to us today, from them emerged a pattern of highly listenable, highly entertaining radio. Let's run down the list and see if these don't bring back a million memories for you. Remember the gold medal fast freight? Here, right out of our files, is the old theme.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? You have just heard the arrival of the gold medal fast freight. Aboard are the four singing members of the train crew, known as the Wheaties Quartet, and two famous passengers, the gold medal organist and the fast freight tenor, besides many, many sacks of gold medal kitchen-tested flour and millions of boxes of those delicious whole wheat flakes with all the bran, crispy, crunchy Wheaties.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran. Try Wheaties, for wheat is the best food of man. They're crispy and crunchy the whole year through. The kiddies never tire of them, and neither will you.
So just
try Wheaties, the best breakfast food in the land.
And now tonight we have a real treat. In person, the original members of the gold medal fast freight. Bill Elliott, Nell Swenson, Philip C. Schmidt, and Ernie Johnson. And here they are to sing for you, Dinah, just as they did 30 years ago.
Carolina, gave me Dinah. I'm the proudest one beneath the Dixie sun. News is spreading, but here's a song my heart keeps singing. Dinah is a ringing on fire in the state of Carolina. If there is and you know her, show her to me. Dinah, with the Dixie I'm playing, I've a lot to sit and gaze and to the eyes of Dinah Lee.
My Dinah Lee.
My Dinah. Every night, why do I shake with fright? Because my Dinah might change her mind about me. Do. To China, I would hop an ocean liner just to be with Dinah, just to be with Dinah, please.
My Dinah. original Wheaties Quartet. And millions of housewives stood over there ironing and laughed at Mrs. Hutchinson's trials with her Swedish maid and Irish handyman, Tina and Tim. And perhaps you have forgotten that Tina and Tim were created by a young Minneapolis actress named Peggy Beckmark and is still in radio in Chicago. She has kindly given us permission to rebroadcast a portion of one of the first Tina and Tim episodes. Listen very carefully now to the character Mrs. Hutchinson in this skit. You know who she is? That's Florence Murphy of the Minneapolis Star and Tribune Promotion Department, and still heard daily on WCCO.
Feed on upon the Swanson River, far, far away.
Presenting that great laugh sensation, Tina and Tim, transcribed for you by the makers of Maltomeal. Well, everything is serene and happy these days in the Hutchinson kitchen. Tina's quarrel with Tim and Inga has been patched up. Oscar the dog has been behaving himself, and Tina just doesn't seem to have any troubles at all. No doubt that accounts for the fact that as we look in on her today, she's singing.
No, 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 sweet Mr. Lee, at last her wife has found you. Ooh,
that's a pretty little ditty.
Oh, dropping from the eaves again, was you? How many times did I have to tell you to rap on the door?
I'm sorry, Tina, but I didn't want to interrupt the song you were singing there. What was it?
Oh, did you think it was pretty?
Sure, fine, fine. But I'm not sure I caught all the words.
Did you think my voice was better?
Well, I
met the singing teacher over to Inga's the other day, and she says the same thing about my voice as the other teacher did.
What was that?
She says if she was me, she would save it. Nothing funny about that, Tim. Tina, I guess I got unconnected on the phone. It was for you, too.
Oh, who was it?
It was that Mrs. Sherman.
Well, I'll call her back.
Yeah, you better do that. She wanted to talk with you.
Washington, 4538. Yes, please. Hello, Agnes? Oh, this is Carolyn Hutchinson. Hello? Hello, Agnes? There must be something the matter with that line.
Must be. I got done connecting, too. Why don't you try it again?
Well, I will. Operator, will you give me Washington 4583? Hello, Agnes. There must be something wrong with the line. Hello? Well, that's funny. I could swear she slammed up the receiver.
Well, Mrs. Hutchinson, if she did, there was nothing to swear about.
I wonder.
Ladies didn't do things like that.
What, Tina?
I says if she did, it
Tina,
was
Tina, just a minute, please.
Yeah?
It seems to me you were having quite a conversation with Mrs. Sherman when I came in.
Oh, yeah, we was talking.
And you were disconnected?
Yeah, we was.
You're sure she didn't hang up the receiver?
Oh, I didn't think so. I didn't see why she should.
I'm wondering. Just what were you talking about?
Well, I was asking her about her rheumatism.
Her rheumatism? Well, she hasn't got rheumatism.
Well, I know that now. She told me.
Well, what made you think she had rheumatism?
Well, it was just something Mr. Hutchinson says that made me think so.
Something Mr. Hutchinson said? What, Tina?
Well, just last night, he says Mrs. Sherman gave him a pain in the neck.
And you told her that?
Well, sure. I just wanted to find out if it was catching.
Why, Tina Torgerson.
What's the matter with it?
Perhaps some of you will recall that fall day in 1924 when the new Memorial Stadium was dedicated on the University of Minnesota campus. The immortal Red Grange and the Fighting Illini came north to crush the hapless Minnesota Gophers. The broadcast of that historic game was done by Herb Paul, now of the Minneapolis Star and Tribune. And Herb is here tonight to recreate for you the closing seconds of that surprising and historic game.
There's the gun. The game is over. Minnesota defeats Illinois 20-7. Listen to that crowd cheer the Gophers. It's a big upset for Minnesota. The Gophers stopped the mighty Red Grange. What a way to dedicate a new stadium. Illinois and Grange were expected to win by several touchdowns. Remember, Grange scored 4 touchdowns in the first 15 minutes against Michigan. Today, it looked as if he might do the same against Minnesota. But he only got 1 touchdown. That came in the first 6 minutes of play. The Gophers, after that, held him in check. When he started his mighty sweeps behind Britain, they ran him to the sidelines. He was tossed for large losses several times by Captain Cox and Cooper at center. He failed to make a long run up to the time he was injured in the third quarter and removed from the game. I have never seen the Gophers keyed to such a high pitch as they were today. They played sensationally. It was Schutte's greatest game at left halfback. He carried the ball 282 yards in 32 plays. The Gophers made 16 first downs to only 6 for Illinois. And they carried the ball 352 yards to 109 for Illinois. What a victory to celebrate dedication of Memorial Stadium.
Another name in sports broadcasting became popular back then. Perhaps you remember tuning in for Halsey Hall and his broadcasts of the baseball games. And here's Ole Hayes, Halsey, to recreate for you his description of the very first baseball broadcast he did on WCCO.
Yes, sir, ladies and gentlemen, it's a beautiful sunny afternoon out here at Nicollet today. While the teams are changing sides, let me run down again through the Miller lineup. At first base is Joe Hauser. Everyone's wondering if he can duplicate or come close to last year's all-time feat of 69 home runs. At second base, Andy Cohen. At shortstop, Leo Norris. At third base, Babe Gansel. In the outfield from left to right, Ab Wright, Spencer Harris, and Buzz Arlett. And down there now in the bullpen, in case the Milwaukee Brewers get tough, are Walt Tauscher and Rosie Ryan. Ryan's back after a year in the big leagues 2 years ago, you know. He set an association record by appearing in 60 games, mostly in relief. All right, the Brewers are set. The pitcher is Lou Polly, who throws three-quarters overhand. He's a right-hander. They sometimes call him Line Drive Polly because of the enthusiastic way that the boys lay the hickory to his offerings. Just the same, he's pitched a 10-inning no-hit game, and there weren't too many line drives that time. Polly's getting set now to face the first hitter, Andy Cohen, in the first inning. Andy's twisting his cap, wiping his hands on his pants, tapping the plate, adjusting his belt. Now he licks his fingers, rubs them off. He does everything. Here's the pitch. Ball one outside. The infield stays normal for Andy. So does the outfield, moving in just a little bit. He hit 10 homers at Buffalo once, and he can't get over it. The pitch, and it's a line drive single right over the shortstop's head. Ab Wright's coming up. Big Ab, he looks every inch the tough guy. The outfielders start scratching their backs on the fences now. The pitch, Ab pops it up. Lynn Storti's under it at second and grabs it. One out, the singling Cohen on first, and here's Joe Hauser. Unser Cho handling that bat like an overfed girl handling a toothpick. They shift to the right on Joe. Polly looks at first, comes in, and holy cow, that one's gone. Way out to right. Looks like it will clear Nicollet Avenue. Yep, it does. Here comes Cohen around, and old Cho's off again as the Millers lead 2-0.
The owners of WCCO, formerly the Washburn Crosby Company, which by this time had become General Mills, began to take a careful look at their radio property. They were essentially in the grain milling and food business and were beginning to wonder whether their energies might not be better devoted exclusively to their milling enterprise. With that thought in mind, they began in about 1928 to look around for ways to dispose of WCCO. As a matter of fact, one day in 1928, a General Mills board meeting was in progress. The directors were discussing that very problem. James Ford Bell, then board chairman of General Mills, was presiding. As we enter the boardroom...
Well, gentlemen, let's look
well,
at this thing.
WCCO has been known as the gold medal station for a number of years now. Yeah, you
well, if this decision were mine, I'd say sell out to the highest bidder
well,
right
I'd
now.
Well, I'd go along with that, but we don't have a bidder right now.
Excuse me, Mr. Bell. Excuse me, Mr. Bell.
It's all right, Miss Peterson. Speak right up. What is it?
Well, there's a young man waiting to see you. His name is Mr. Paley.
Paley? Paley? I don't know any Mr. Paley. I can't see him right now. Tell him to come back tomorrow.
Oh, well, excuse me, Mr. Bell. He says it's very urgent.
Urgent? What could be more urgent than our problem with WCCO right at this moment?
But, Mr. Bell, that's what he wants to talk to you about. WCCO.
Oh, is that right? Well, that's different. Ask him to come in.
Mr. Bell.
Yes, I'm Mr. Bell.
Pardon me, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's very important, and I'm only in town for a short time. Now, I represent the United Cigar Company.
Cigar Company? But, young man, my secretary led me to believe that you were in the broadcasting business. She said that you were interested in WCCO.
I am, Mr. Bell. That is, my father owns the United Cigar Company, and he has just purchased a company known as the Columbia Broadcasting System. And we are interested in obtaining several radio properties in key markets. We have heard that you might consider selling WCCO.
Well, it so happens that just as you came in, we were talking about the possibility of selling WCCO. And, of course, you realize it's a valuable property. We have a good deal of money invested. Now, what did you have in mind? That is, what would you be willing to offer?
Well, it's rather difficult to say exactly. You people know how the broadcasting business is today. While it seems to be on a firm foundation, no great amount of money has been made in the industry yet, but there seems to be some indication that it has a promising future, and it's managed in the
After
proper...
some weeks of negotiation, a deal was made, and Mr. William S. Paley and the Columbia Broadcasting System did acquire 50% of WCCO. A few years later, CBS bought the remaining 50% and became sole owners of WCCO. And under the guidance of the Columbia Broadcasting System and young Bill Paley, WCCO did become everything the new owners had hoped. It became the other member of the family in every home in the Northwest. It was a constant companion from breakfast until bedtime. Its power was increased to 50,000 watts, the maximum allowed by the Federal Communications Commission. Its ever-expanding service endeared it to its millions of listeners. And there were new programs, new faces, new voices who became familiar in every Northwest home. Of all the staff members, though he rarely was heard on the air, probably no one was more beloved than the man who was manager of WCCO throughout the 1930s. Earl Gammons, now Vice President of the Columbia Broadcasting System in Washington, D.C. Earl, of course, has a good many fond memories of his life and his work here as a member of the WCCO family. Earl, what about those days?
WCCO and I are celebrating our 30th anniversary in radio. It was in October 1924 that I was instructed by my employer, Washburn Crosby Company, to go up and help with the publicity on a new venture called a radio station. I was confident that the officers of the company responsible for this purchase must have lost their minds. And after I had been on the new job for about 3 months, I was sure I had lost mine. The staff consisted of 14 people. Every day we climbed the hill to our studios in the Oak Grove Hotel to put on the so-called programs. Outside of the engineers, every member of the staff performed on the air. Stenographers doubled on the piano, and practically everyone was a news or market broadcaster. Few programs were scheduled more than a day in advance, if that long, and there was no worry about how long the programs lasted. None of the talent was paid, and we had no commercials. This last situation was soon corrected. WCCO has a great heritage, and the people of Minnesota, and particularly the Twin Cities, along with those of us who made our start in the industry at that time, will always owe a debt of gratitude to the late Donald D. Davis, who spearheaded the purchase of the station by Washburn Crosby Company. As long as it remained under their ownership, he was the inspiration and guiding light for all of us. I'm very happy to have this opportunity to join in these anniversary greetings, and I always point to WCCO with pride as the place of my birth in this industry.
And under Mr. Gammon's guidance, during the difficult years of the Depression 30s, WCCO gradually became the radio station as you know it today. It became a radio station of stature, not only in the home, but also in the economy of the Northwest. Those firms who saw the potential of radio advertising were as much pioneers as those who were heard on the air every day. To them goes a large share of credit for the success of this new service enterprise to people. And those advertisers, those business firms, soon found their brand names and their products were household words, as was WCCO. With the assistance of these sponsors and with their cooperation, WCCO developed new programs, new ideas, new areas of public service. And here in the Northwest, over WCCO, there were programs of sparkling entertainment, fine orchestra music, brilliant young singers. And here's a program that will take you back over the years. It featured Jack Malerick's orchestra.
Hormel presents Swing with the String. Swing with the String. Swing to the music of Jack Malerick and the Hormel Orchestra. The voice of Gertrude Donahue.
You're the most music.
Heydrich and his romantic violin. and the songs of Jack Fulton.
The night is young and you're so beautiful.
Jack Malarick and the orchestra start the program with Plenty of Money and You from Gold Diggers of 1937.
And there was drama, soul-stirring, spine-tingling drama. This drama was not calculated to fool the listener. It was meant to be entertaining. It was the brainchild of enterprising young actors, the sons and daughters of the Northwest who sought their place in the new world of entertainment. It was corny by today's standards, but the actors knew it was corny, and so did the audience, but still they loved it. But from that dramatic effort came the performers who have become big names in the world of entertainment today. And there was a young man who came to WCCO in the early 30s playing bit parts in dramatic skits for $3.50 a performance. And he has since become well-known and beloved to millions of Northwest listeners as Cedric Adams, entertainer, news broadcaster, and last but not least, the Duke of Magnolia. Cedric was not too far removed in time from the dusty streets of Magnolia when he appeared in the Twin Cities, when he was a student at the University of Minnesota, when he wrote for Captain Billy's famous Whiz Bang in Robbinsdale. But these, remember, were Depression 30s. You had to eat, and so did Cedric Adams. A young lady at WCCO in those days, Marjorie Ellis McCready, was writing and performing the female lead in a program called The Curtain's Part. And her handsome leading man was none other than Cedric Adams. And now try to remember that it's 1931. You're sitting by your radio waiting for The Curtain's Part.
Dingy room over Taiwong's opium den. A room where malicious fate lies festering.